Hello, my name is Ray Jefferson, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. On this program, we sit down with leaders in the arts and cultural sectors in our city. Today, we're talking to Stephanie Martinez about what's brewing at the Dr. Pepper Museum this holiday season. Later on, we'll hear the segment David and Art with David Smith. Right now, I'm joined by Kennedy Sam, who's a voice you've probably heard hosting the program in recent months. I've asked her to join me today for a brief discussion about creativity and how to tap into it. Kennedy, thanks for being here.
Hey, Ray. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good.
So, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you consider yourself to be a creative person?
I would say so. It was funny when I was interviewing for this position with Creative Waco, we were talking about arts and culture, and I was like, well, I'm not an artist at all. I cannot draw. I cannot sing. I cannot play an instrument. But I do consider myself a creative because I have an eye for certain things, and I think that's where creativity kind of differentiates from being an artist, because I mean, you don't always have to create something to be creative.
Sure. So that's a really good way of thinking about that. I really prefer the term creative because I it's a very safe word to me.
Yeah.
And I'm part of Mammoth Collective, which is a group that you interviewed a few months back. And if you've missed that episode, Mammoth Collective is just a group of all female artists who are creating conceptual art at art exhibitions around the city. And so I'm a part of that, and I'm the only artist in it who's not a formally trained artist, but I still feel weird using the word artist to describe myself, even though I'm literally making stuff and showing it in an art show, in art galleries with other artists.
Right.
But creative just feels much safer because I'm not trained, you know, I feel like there's a lot less pressure to be refined and like perfect and good at what I do. And I think it is good, but you know, you get what I'm saying.
I mean, you are creating art in a sense because you do have such a way with words, and I mean, poetry can be art. We just saw the Ekphrasis show where they combine visual art with the art of telling stories through words.
So. Absolutely, yeah. So there's quite a bit of research on creativity, and we have some numbers from a really big study that was done by Adobe several years ago. And it focuses on creativity in the workplace, which I think is probably one of the largest or the most popular areas where you know, most people would encounter creativity. So can you share some of those stats with us?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually a couple months back, we had an article in the Greater Waco Chamber, you know, quarterly business magazine about creativity in the workplace. So this is something that is true and honest and is very needed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Some of the stats that I have here, 6 out of 10 people feel like being creative is valuable to their country's economy. I mean, when you think about what creativity is and how it's involved in the workplace, it's about, you know, being innovative and, always seeking the next, looking forward to the future. So, I mean, if you don't have creativity in your workplace, then you're just in a stagnant position.
Yeah.
So that's really important in boosting the economy and staying on our toes.
Absolutely. And, you know, actually, along that same thought, when I was doing research for, you know, this portion of our show today, I was like, I don't even actually know what, like, the technical definition of creativity is. And so I was looking it up. And, of course, there are, like, a million different definitions that are kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the key components, I think, were that it's about having original ideas or thoughts and then being able to execute them in such a way to, like, accomplish a goal or to solve a problem.
Right.
So it's kind of like imagination plus like action equals creativity, which is really interesting. And it's like, you know, it's like goofy and I made that up, but
no, I mean, that's really how it is. Like
when
you look at a problem, you're not just looking at the problem, you're looking at the factors that are all encompassing the issue. So when you're thinking creatively, you also have to think critically in solving those issues.
So what are some other numbers that came out of that Adobe study?
Yeah, so in our age of social media, people are also spending 50% of their time online ingesting content, which I think is also a good way to kind of bolster your creativity because, I mean, as you're scrolling, you know, your Facebook, your Twitter, your Instagram, your Pinterest, whatever, you are constantly taking in those images, and whether it's like you want to recreate whatever you see or you want to tailor it a little bit to apply to your life, I think that's a perfect way, you know, to increase creativity.
Yeah. What are your favorite social media apps?
Oh my God, I am obsessed with Twitter.
Okay.
Even though it's not the same Twitter that used to be when I was, you know, in 2011.
It has definitely changed.
But the content that people are creating on Twitter is awesome. It is. I mean, it's all like reposts from TikTok now, which used to be like Musical.ly, and just seeing how the new generation like I'm just old at 23.
I know.
But there is a new generation online, and they are so creative, and they're being their own influencers. They're being their own comedians, and it's just so interesting to see how social media is being used these days outside of just, you know, having a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite things about the internet is the meme.
Yes.
Just because, like, you see such, like, goofy things.
Yes.
We're like, I never would have thought to put those words with that image, but it
at
works,
all.
And
yeah.
I understand exactly what they're talking about.
And I love the transition from, like, Facebook, and then Instagram will get it a couple of days later, and
yeah.
then, like, a month later, Facebook will get it.
Yep. So can you share some parting thoughts on mm-hmm. how we can increase our creative potential?
Yeah, so I have four right here on hand. The first one is to capture new ideas. Always be ready to record new thoughts you may have. Keep a pen and paper. I mean, you know, you could just speak into your notes on the phone. Like, I know I have a bunch of random notes.
Oh, yeah.
Just from what I've seen around that I just get inspired by.
Yeah.
Another one is to seek out challenging tasks. So that's a great way to keep your, I don't know, brain fresh, and so you don't get stuck in a routine, and you always have some kind of challenge to help grow your skills and your, I don't know, your mindset. So, yeah, and then another one I have is to broaden your knowledge. Ooh, that's a great one because MCC has those courses, continuing education, and mm-hmm. so you can do all kinds of, you know, take all kinds of courses to just, I don't know, reach new art that you might not know how to do, but you want to, I don't know, dabble in watercolors or jewelry making. And I know there's a lot of businesses like MC Arts Supplies and January that are also starting to host classes on, like, pottery, watercolor, XYZ. So there's so many resources around town to, I don't know, teach you something new.
Yeah. I feel obligated to also mention, which I think a lot of people know, Baylor has continuing ed classes too.
Oh, yeah.
But I do teach a class for nonprofit marketing, so I feel like I have to, that.
Shameless plug.
Absolutely. And what's your last point for us today?
Yeah, so my last point is to surround yourself with interesting things and people. So, you know, attract the people in the environment that, you know, you would like to thrive in. So that's all I can say.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kennedy, for sharing these tips
on
how to improve our creativity. The sources we've discussed today will be linked in today's blog post at creativewaco.org/blog. There's a very important difference between opinion and informed opinion. Here's this week's edition of David and Art with David Smith.
A few years ago, a report in Psychology Today theorized that a root of the painfully visible social troubles in the United States these days isn't racism, or access to guns, or the dissolution of the family, or any of the string of usual suspects proffered by the right or the left. Instead, it's anti-intellectualism, what the writer David Niosi called an abandonment of reason. It is beyond dispute that critical thinking has been abandoned as a cultural value, he said, and from this abandonment comes all sorts of unexpected social ills. Is the widely reported drop-off in support for the arts one of these ills? How about the increasing disappearance of the arts from general cultural literacy and from school curricula? Are the arts simply too intellectual for contemporary America to bear? Well, no, they're not. But they certainly have the reputation of being. And in today's culture, perception matters tremendously. It's all but a stand-in for informed opinion. In his 1964 book, Anti-Intellectualism in American History, famed historian Richard Hofstadter said that in modern American culture, intellectuals, in which group I would include artists, have inherited the suspicion and the resentment that the Puritans and the egalitarians of an earlier age aimed at aristocrats. Occasionally, someone will dare to say that elitism in the arts is, in fact, compatible with American culture, or at least not somehow nefarious. When he served on the National Council for the Arts, Broadway actor and musician Theodore Bickel said, "Art that sought government funding must meet a set standard of professional excellence." If that is elitist, he said, then so be it. The search for excellence is, by definition, elitist. We should not be in the business of making the mediocre palatable, but identifying the best there is and then giving it the widest distribution to the most people. Compared to other intellectual achievements that are truly elite, an appreciation of the arts is not, because anyone can teach him or herself how to appreciate them simply by taking the time to look, listen, and think. But that undemocratic assumption is still hard to shake. It's not that we don't respect any intelligence, because most of the time, to some extent at least, we seem to. It's more accurate to say that we're intensely skeptical of any intelligence directed to purposes that aren't immediately practical. The arts have responded by trying to make the case that they have measurable effects on everything from local economic growth to standardized test scores. A more lasting, deeper transformation of the attitude would come through education, direct experience, and some critical thinking. But all that depends on those things not being abandoned.
Listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Tis the season for Dr. Pepper. I'm here with the Dr. Pepper Museum's Public Programs Manager, Stephanie Martinez. The museum has been around since the early 90s and offers a historic take on the globally consumed beverage, but one of their biggest draws is a full schedule of community events year-round. Stephanie is here to tell us more about what to expect this holiday season. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
So, I have a really important question to kick things off. Is it just me, or is there a noticeable difference in taste between bottled Dr. Pepper and soda fountain Dr. Pepper?
That is a really great question. it's a question that we get asked a lot at the museum. In my opinion, I feel like the bottled Dr. Pepper, this is going to be controversial, but I kind of like the bottled Dr. Pepper a little bit better.
What?
Except for, of course, when it's coming out from our soda fountain.
Oh, okay, all right.
Especially at the museum. I mean, when you're at the mecca of Dr. Pepper,
sure.
Dr. Pepper Museum, it's going to taste 10 times better. But specifically with our soda fountain, and the way our sodas are made there, it's kind of the old-timey fashion way, where a soda jerk puts the syrup into a cup, a glass, and then they add in the carbonated water with two different kinds of streams. And so when it's made that old-fashioned way, it's not necessarily as carbonated as like a bottle would be or a can would be. But it tastes really sweet. So I prefer that above everything. The bottle, the can, the soda fountain at a drive-thru or a restaurant. I think our Dr. Pepper is, of course, superior to all those other ones.
Well, that's great. I'm glad that you're proud of your product.
Yes, yes.
So let's start off a little bit about Dr. Pepper Museum as a whole. How long has it been in operation? I know in our introduction I mentioned it's been around since the early 90s. Has it always just, you know, existed as it is, or like have you guys had any new things that are coming in like the last few decades or so?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to say that the Dr. Pepper Museum really started to grow and organize in the late 1980s, but then the museum officially opened in 1991, May of 1991. We like to say that it was founded by two men, one of which was Woodrow Wilson Clements. Everyone called him Foot, so we call him Foots Clements. He was one of the CEOs of the Dr. Pepper Museum. And then the other man was Wilton Lanning. He was a Baylor graduate. He was involved with Pagets, the local company. And so those two men really worked together to save the historic building where the museum is housed today, and then open up the Dr. Pepper Museum. And then from there, it's just really grown and taken off. We get people from all over Waco, all over the state, all over the country, and even people from all over the world who come make their Dr. Pepper journey. In 2016, we opened the newest part of the museum, the Kellam Rotan Building, which features the Ted Getterman Gallery. In there we have a functional or a bottling line that's kind of on a loop, so you can kind of see how it how it happens, how it would have happened. And then we also have an interactive show, a space where we have our liquid lab shows, and then lots of other exhibits about transportation and Big Red, which was also invented in Waco.
Cool. That's awesome. So what's the nature of the museum's relationship to the company that actually bottles and sells Dr. Pepper today? It's my understanding that that's no longer actually like the owner of the Dr. Pepper Museum. So kind of how do those two companies work together?
Right. Absolutely. So the building that I mentioned earlier, the original building, that was the headquarters of the Dr. Pepper company for a while. When it was being bottled there and produced there, the name of the company was the Artesian Manufacturing and Bottling Company. They made Dr. Pepper there. They made some other beverages like wine, coca, celery, champagne.
Oh, wow.
Aqua Lithia, lithiated water. So eventually they just started to focus on Dr. Pepper. They moved their headquarters close to the Dallas area. And eventually their name changed to Dr. Pepper Snapple Group. So they owned lots of beverages, including Dr. Pepper, Snapple, Orange Crush, that sort of thing. And then last year the company merged with Keurig. So the new name of the company is Keurig Dr. Pepper. It's this massive, wonderful company that has, I want to say, close to 200 beverages, lots of sodas, lots of juices, teas, and of course lots of coffees as well. So we have a really great relationship with them. They do donate to the museum, but we are a nonprofit and we're not majorly funded by Keurig Dr. Pepper. They have this really great thing, though, called the Challenge Grant, where every dollar that's donated by local visitors, by visitors that come to the museum, they will match up to $100,000.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's wonderful. It's so generous of them. And then we can use those funds to help restore and renovate both of our historic buildings. I like to tell people the building where we're housed in, the main one, the original headquarters, that was built in 1906. And then the other building that we recently opened in 2016, that one is from 1882.
Oh, wow.
So it's actually older than Dr. Pepper itself.
Yeah.
So that's a really great thing that they help us out with. They have that wonderful challenge grant. And they also have allowed us to house a lot of their objects. So we have this great relationship there, but it is very interesting to visitors that we're not necessarily overseen completely by them. It's very unique, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So why does someone such as yourself choose to work at the Dr. Pepper Museum? You know, is there something about the culture of the organization or even the product itself that really kind of draws people in?
Sure, absolutely. I think, number one, you just have to be a big lover of Dr. Pepper. That's kind of on the job application, of course. But then also, the museum and the museum's mission provides us with this really unique way to teach history and approach history. Our mission is to, of course, preserve and educate visitors on local history, Waco history, Dr. Pepper history, the soft drink industry history. But then also, that also comes along with free enterprise and appreciation of the free enterprise economic system. We think that the story of Dr. Pepper in Waco just so wonderfully exemplifies free enterprise. It was invented in a pharmacy here in Waco called the Old Corner Drugstore by a local pharmacist. And then it just grew from there. They were originally just producing the syrup for the soda in the back room of the pharmacy. But so many people chose Dr. Pepper over and over and over again. It became this huge hit that they realized that one little room in the back of the pharmacy wasn't going to be enough. So they built a building, a headquarters. They moved around a couple of times until they even outgrew that headquarters and, like I said, moved to their current area of location, the Dallas area. So it's just a really unique approach to that. Everyone's pretty familiar with soda. Everyone has a favorite soda, even if it's not Dr. Pepper. And we can use that love of soda and that knowledge of soda, this really kind of common everyday item, as a vehicle to teach about history and then also to teach about the free enterprise system and inspire people to become inventors themselves, become business owners. So it's this really great opportunity that I think everyone at the museum really appreciates.
Can you talk a little bit about the role that education actually plays in the mission that you guys have I believe you guys have, it's called the Free Enterprise Institute. Is that correct?
Sure, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so what we do for the most part, what that kind of looks like on a day-to-day basis, is we do have tours and field trips and school groups that come to the museum. We have tours of our building, of our exhibits. I think one of my favorite programs is something that we call Create a Soft Drink. It includes a tour of the museum, but then we also have the other half of the program where whoever's participating, students, seniors, adults, it's a great team-building opportunity. The participants get into groups, and they work together to create their own soft drink. They pick some flavors of syrup. They mix the syrup with carbonated water, and then usually they have to come up with a name for their soda and like a label for their soda, maybe a commercial, a marketing plan. So it's really great because we like to tell people that they are essentially being like Dr. Charles Alderton, the inventor of Dr. Pepper. They get to step into that role of being a beverage chemist, being a beverage scientist. So that's pretty fun.
Those of us in the community who are maybe less familiar with the work and the programming that you guys do at the museum may be tempted to think that all that you really have is, you know, the museum itself. And so you guys actually do a really great job of creating events year round that expand on that idea of, you know, the history of one drink. Can you tell us about the current exhibit that's at the museum called Spirited?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a traveling exhibit. It's courtesy of National Endowment of Humanities on the Road, also in association with Mid-America Arts Alliance and the National Constitution Center. So it's had a pretty long run. I feel like they stopped the run a while ago just to refurbish it, replenish it. And then I think we're the second place since the refurbishment that it's come to stop and visit. It's about prohibition and the effects that it had on America, how that played out in America. And it's a really exciting exhibit. Lots of people might kind of be a little confused. Prohibition, alcohol, how does that work with Dr. Pepper and soda? The connections might not seem super obvious. But if you think about it, prohibition, you can't drink alcohol anymore. You can't produce alcohol anymore. What else are you going to drink? Well, you could drink water if you wanted to, but water can sometimes be a little unexciting. So the next best thing is a soft beverage, as opposed to a hard beverage, a soft drink. So sodas, things like root beer, really skyrocketed with prohibition. And I want to say 7-Up was invented during prohibition, and then also the society and the culture of soda fountains. If you can't go to a bar and have that great socialization aspects, the next best thing, once again, is to go visit a soda fountain. It was a lot more socially acceptable for people to, for women especially, to go to a soda fountain socialize with everyone. Children could go to a soda fountain. All of that stuff you couldn't really have at the saloons or the bars. Women weren't usually accepted in there. Same thing with children. They're not usually accepted in a bar either. So a soda fountain and the soda industry is a really great solution to that. So we have supplemented our exhibit supplemented the traveling exhibit with some items from our own collection, some items that are on loan. So we're trying to bring out the soda story in that because it is a huge part of that story of prohibition.
That's incredible. That's such an interesting connection that, like you said, is not terribly obvious, especially if you haven't given that any thought. So is that ticketed any differently than a regular admission ticket? Or is that part of the greater museum experience?
Oh, that's a great question. So it is included in the general admission price. So it is a very special exhibit. It's very exciting. There are lots of very cool interactives. We have wonderful objects that are on display, and it's at the exact same price that you would have paid before the exhibit opened. It's a very limited run. I want to say the last day is January 7th. So it's here for a very brief amount of time, and then it'll continue on visiting and traveling to other museums where lots of other people will enjoy it.
Excellent. So what else do you guys have on the calendar for the holiday season?
So we've got a couple of things, especially related to Spirited, the Prohibition exhibit. We are planning to have some sort of panel event, panel discussion, probably on the first Friday in January. We would love to take a look at local breweries, and especially how they are affected by alcohol laws today in Texas. Because even though Prohibition was eventually repealed, we still do feel the effects of that today. So there are lots of laws, lots of restrictions, and we want to talk to local people, local businesses that are affected by those and really get their perspective, get their opinions, get their input. So that's something that we're planning for, like I said, beginning of January of 2020. We also have our Dr. Pepper Christmas event, which we have every single year. It's the first Friday of December. It's going to be free, completely free admission. We are going to have lots of activities. This is kind of a day where we bring out all of our staff members. We bring out all of our best activities. And then it's really just a day for the public and our local community to come out to the museum, see what the museum is all about. No risk, no worries about having to pay admission, and celebrate the holidays. And then we also have some things going on just at the museum. We're doing some construction because it is an old building. We're just renovating the building. If you ever see like a crane on Fifth Street, Mary Fifth Street, we are just fixing up the brick out there, hoping to make it a little bit nicer.
So before we go, I'd love to know, how do you think that creativity plays a role in the visitor experience at the museum?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we strive to make creativity present throughout the whole visitor experience. But especially we want to inspire people to seriously consider starting their own business or soliciting local businesses and keeping those local businesses thriving. From my own personal experience, I've led some staff-led presentations where I talk about some old-timey sodas like the celery, some cold clam broth soda, rose soda. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And then what we do is we try to push these visitors. We try to encourage them to, if they had to come up with their own soda today, how would they do that? What flavors would they mix together? I've heard things like lavender. I've heard things like peppermint. I've heard things like Cheeto or pancake or pumpkin spice. So we really want them to think creatively in everything that they do. And hopefully that creativity will result in this wonderful endeavor that might result in this new business that might end up rivaling Dr. Pepper.
Stephanie, thank you so much for stopping by today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
The Dr. Pepper Christmas event is December 6th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Visit drpeppermuseum.com for a full schedule of holiday events and to purchase tickets. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Catch a new episode next Friday on November 29th, when co-host Kennedy Sam will introduce us to more creative leaders in Waco. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. I'm Ray Jefferson. Thanks for tuning in.